Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today needs a little introduction. It's Sheldon Neidel, who is very well known for the work he does on behalf of the Galactic Federation. I refer to him as an ambassador, and I wonder what he would call himself and what he sees exactly is his role for the Galactic Federation. So welcome to the program, Sheldon.
Glad to be here today, Mike. As far as what I consider myself, I just consider myself to be a messenger for the Galactic Federation, and so thanks for calling me an ambassador. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm sure you've done an excellent job. If I recall correctly, you set all this up way back in 97.
Well, I began the PAO in 97, right?
Yes.
I actually started doing all this stuff in 93.
Oh, did you? Right. I hadn't realized it went back that far. Oh, it shows you how time really flies. Now, you recently sent me some of your DVDs, and one of them was Meet Your First Contact Team, which is very excellent DVDs, and some of the questions I would like to raise are based on that. But I thought first, as over a period of years, there has been a certain, well, uncertainty about the way in which the events would progress, which event would happen first, and so forth. You might like to just advise us briefly how you see it happening, but I believe it's becoming apparent that the first event will be the Prosperity Program, followed by government changes, and then a whole series of other events. Is that correct?
From what I've been told and what I see happening, I would say that the way you've outlined it is exactly the way it looks like it's going to come down. So all I can really say is you're correct, and I haven't seen any real major changes that they've told me, so we'll just go with what you just said.
Right. Now, I must admit the Prosperity Program, or reference to it, has been around for a long, long time. But tell me, how did that first come into being?
Well, the Prosperity Programs originally began with Saint Germain way back in the 18th century, around 1729, 1730. And then they moved forward under the Saint Germain World Trust. And in the 1970s, there was a group that I like to call the Earth Allies that came together. They were mostly two groups. They were a group of young, wealthy, and very affluent men and women dedicated to the light, who decided to have a backup program to use various forms of money tranching and other aspects of gathering monies to put together in their own trust so that they could use that, as I said, as the backup in case something happened with the Saint Germain Trust. So the two groups have come together, and as we sit here right now, we are very close to things happening. Now, in the United States, there's something else that wasn't quite a prosperity program. It's called the Farmer Claims. And that has really been tied in greatly to the government change, and so that is also very close to happening. So because of all of that, I would say that with the St. Germain Trust, the backup trust, as well as the whole process that has gone on with the farmers' claims, we're pretty close to about everything happening.
Right. Now, was it the Prosperity Fund that people applied to participate in and would be expecting to get some amount out of it?
Right, right. Basically, the monies have changed. What they are actually going to be, except to say that they're incredible amounts of money, that's between the people running these various trusts and the people who are in charge of putting the actual programs together for delivery. So what it is right now, all I can say, it's going to be a lot of money. Most of it has to be given away. So basically, that's how I would say everything is right now. So we are on the edge of it. The finalities needed for all these changes to occur are just about finished, and the process then is for it to happen. Now, when that magical date is, I don't know, because that's one of the things they have decided that they have to keep top secret. So all we can say is soon, that the basic programs are in place and that the stuff needed to get all of this moving is supposedly just about finished. So we're kind of, I think, at the edge of a moment. It's kind of like that famous moment that lasted for months in World War II, which they called the Quiet War, where nothing happened. And other people eventually began calling it the Phony War. But this basically is where we are at right now. In the same period, there, what's about to happen is going to suddenly be like a shock and awe, and then great and wonderful things will happen. So that's all we can really say right now about that.
Right. I'm personally a little surprised that the prosperity program actually comes before the government changes. Wouldn't there be some danger that members of the Illuminati or the dark forces would try to, shall we say, cut in on it?
Well, this is something they've been trying unsuccessfully to do for God knows how long in these decades that it has happened. Maybe it's like 16, 17 or more years. But anyway, we've reached a point right now where it's close, and indeed the dark is trying very difficultly right now to get their paws on it. It has not happened because it's very specially protected. Once these deliveries happen, and they will happen very swiftly, the rest will happen very fast, because all it requires is some various legal decisions that then put the rest in place almost immediately. So like less than 24 hours after this delivery happens, there'll be the changes in government that allow for the other stuff that we've been talking about.
Right. Now, presumably, these trust funds are held in some form of precious metals, but who looks after them? I mean, where are they now?
They're in special depositories that are very highly protected, not only by various security forces on the ground, but also various security forces from the Galactic Federation above. So where they are, and they're in a lot of third world countries and other countries around the world, and they are just waiting right now as the backup for the creating the new currency and financial systems that people have been talking about for some time. So the whole process is that these gold things, the gold depositories, the gold reserves, whatever you want to call them, are there waiting. They're not going to be moved. There's simply going to be various certificates and things related to it that will allow various countries to go on the gold standard and know that their money is indeed backed up by gold. And when it's needed, those things that are required for this all to happen will be in place. So we don't have to worry about the gold standard happening or the new currency happening. What's basically going to be happening is that when this is all ready to go, that stuff, the various gold needed for this will be in place. Plus there's other monies that are involved with this process, which includes other precious elements like diamonds, et cetera, that are going to be part of this whole process. So those reserves are in place. They're all around the world. They're in Europe. They're in Asia. They're in the Americas. They're in Oceania. They're all around the world. And when the right time comes, they will be revealed.
Right. So would disclosure follow those two events? Would that be the next one on the list?
Right. About 2 weeks to 3 weeks at the very most after the first aspects happen, which are the initial things that are part of the announcements, which are things like debt forgiveness and ending of taxes, why the new governments have been changed into something differently, why they're constitutional governments, they're not just some kind of a coup, and why this whole process had to happen, and then where this is going will all be demonstrated and announced and explained, and things will happen like refunds of tax monies, because taxation will also be over with. So what we have is an incredible program, and naturally disclosure is a part of that. So about 2 to 3 weeks after the initial process of changing the governments, explaining the what's going on, and actually beginning the process of this payouts of different fundings, this will all happen. And of course that also means the end of things like people in mortgage foreclosure, et cetera, especially in this country, and I know a lot of other parts of the world where this is a big thing, will not have to worry about that. They'll get the ownership of their houses, plus all the loans will be gone. People will be completely in a position where all the major debts they have that have anything to do with banking or anything to do with the financial system will, of course, be forgiven. So people are going to be moving from the present plight where they're at to an entirely different system of abundance, which, of course, most people on this planet have not really known for a long, long time.
That sounds absolutely wonderful, almost unbelievable. Now, I believe at one time, recently, you spoke of the IMF as being part of the Prosperity Fund setup. I'm going to ask you if that is correct, but the reason is that I thought the International Monetary Fund was a bit suspect in their dealings.
Well, the IMF as it is now constituted is indeed the, you might call it the debt cop of the world. And what needs to happen is we have to change this whole system. So how it's going to be changed is when the new financial system comes in, the IMF is going to be completely reconstituted. It's no longer just going to become a monetary fund which is based upon the central banks of the planet. It's going to be a system that is based upon, as you might say, as a kind of cop for the major central banks on this country and in this world to remain within this new banking system. We have a very incredibly different, wide-open, transparent banking system, and all it needs is somebody to enforce it. So the IMF is going to move from being the boogeyman in the world, so to speak, because right now it's the one that enforces all the debts of major third world countries and tries to work out ways of getting these paid or prevents new loans from being issued. And so what is going to happen is that's going to be gone because of the debt forgiveness, and it's going to assume a new role. And that new role is what we were just very vaguely talking about when I was giving the answer to this.
It all sounds wonderfully near, but would you personally think that it really has to start before the end of this year?
I would hope that it would start before the end of this year. Actually, I would hope it would start in days or a week or two at the most. But whatever it is that is the key points behind starting this whole process is the things that they are waiting for to happen. And so when that happens, when that magical date happens, it will all happen. Now, as I just said, my opinion is that I would like to have it happen like sooner than later, like imminently, as they've been telling me. So when I see it all happen, I will be very happy. And I feel there's an excellent chance for it to happen more like in the next days, weeks, or months than years. So that's where I'm at with it, and that's my opinion. It's not what I've been told, except that it's imminent, and that's what I know. So I agree with you. The sooner, the better.
Absolutely, yes. Now, coming to your DVD, one of the questions I would like to ask is, you mentioned that the Galactic Federation began 4.5 million years ago and now comprises of 50 civilizations. And what I wondered is, do you happen to know how many of those civilizations are human-like?
Well, what we're talking about when you were talking about the 50... we're talking about when in that particular DVD are the 50 human civilizations that helped to create the colony of Lemuria. There's actually over 200,000 member star nations and groups that make up the Galactic Federation throughout this galaxy right now.
Right. That seems to make more sense when you consider that over 4.5 million years, the way I put it to you, I'm only referring to 50 civilizations. Yeah, 2,000 or so makes a lot more sense. Do they all have some input into what is happening in our universe?
Right, they do. The Galactic Federation has a special spiritual council that works with the spiritual hierarchies on the divine plan and how creation, especially the thing that concerns us the most, physical creation, is unfolding. So they definitely have a say in how physical creation unfolds within this particular galaxy. And that's why the Galactic Federation's main task has been basically two things: to help unfold this creation, and two, to spread the light of the Creator across this particular galaxy and to change what has been mostly a dark galaxy into a light one.
Right. Now, you also mentioned that 40 to 50 civilizations colonized our planet 900,000 years ago. Did we ourselves inhabit the Earth at that time?
Well, basically what we have to look at, and most people who deal with human genetics and the human genome have realized that we are basically ETs. We are not from here. Basically, humanity as we know it today began roughly at the time of Lemuria and another group that came before that was largely all wiped out, which was around 2 million years ago. So what we need to understand when we look at humanity as a species is that we are all extraterrestrials. We came here as fully conscious beings roughly around 900,000 years ago. We reached the Great Fall toward the end of Atlantis, which roughly was about the time of Atlantis's fall. Roughly about 15,000 to 18,000 years ago, with limited consciousness, humans began on this planet as we know them today. And they were finally released with the fall of Atlantis roughly about 13,000 years ago. So what we have had over the last 13 millennia is a movement from where we were back then to learning who we are, to understanding what that really means, to going through a whole game that went with a group that tried to make pretend they were our creator gods, namely the Anunnaki, which simply means sky gods in the Sumerian. And as we look at that whole history and that whole line of manipulations, we see that we learned a great deal of wisdoms, and that now the time has come for us to reconstitute ourselves back into being fully conscious beings, to take all that knowledge and wisdom and use it now to create a really incredible star nation within this solar system, and use that process of our growth to bring across the entire galaxy an even greater role that we have to play, which is as a bringer together of peace, and spread our abilities not only among what was the former dark, limited conscious beings, the majority beings of this galaxy, but also of other galaxies around us. So we really have quite a future and an incredible past, and it's time for us to rejoin, as I like to say, the galaxy, and get back to where we were, and know that this interregnum was just no more than a time for learning some knowledge and wisdoms about who we are and where we were.
Yeah. When you say learning about who we are, have you more or less described that in what you just said, or are you thinking of a more personal situation, like me as an individual?
Well, what we're doing here is, of course, learning about limited consciousness, about lack, about hierarchies, about people that have money, people that don't, poor and rich, power games played by groups that are within their rights, as they see it, their sovereignty to control certain regions of the planet, whether you call them city-states up to the present nation-state, up to the more large regional states like the associations known as the United States and the European Union. So what we are right now doing is creating different ways of looking at the world, of seeing how the world has changed. We've moved from realities that were much more brutal in looking at the rate and what man was to where we are right now. So we have actually gone through, as I was just stating, an education in how this dark works. And as we become fully conscious again, which is who and what we are, namely when we are fully conscious, we're able to walk between the worlds of spirit and the world of physicality. We become people who are fully able to understand what the divine plan is, to understand who and what we really are in terms of where we sit with our life contracts, our past lives, our future lives, how the ultimate now operates in higher levels, and understanding the energies that come from higher levels, how to use them, and how to bring together the greatest tool of all that we have, which is our human potential, and use that to create what I like to call galactic civilization or galactic society. And as we become able to do this and understand it more and more because of the changes happening to us, we are being instructed by people like myself on the process of what is going on out there. And as this all happens, as we take all this information together, we will reach a point of first contact, which is not that far away. And when that happens, then we move to that stage we've been talking about, to become fully conscious beings. And that's the time that I'm really waiting for, as I'm sure all of us are, so we can, as I like to call it, get on with what we really are and what we're really about.
Yes. That's most interesting, a very full description of how it will be. Now, something that's often puzzled me, Sheldon, is that I think I'm correct in saying this, the ETs have a higher consciousness and they are androgynous. If that is correct, why do they dress in what we would recognize as male and female, say, outfits or hairstyles and so forth?
Well, what they do, basically, is they conduct a civilization in which the concept of being male and being female is fully determined. One comes in as either male or female and fully understands what that is all about and all its different levels. And it has a lot more levels than exist for most people on this planet. People who have some of the ancient information that hints a little at what fully conscious male and female is all about understand there are various forms of rituals, etc., that are part of this whole process. So what we have here is a group that understands the nature of the relationship of male and female, the universal male and female balance within each one of us, and going through a lifetime to experience certain things in certain ways so that we are able to understand exactly what each aspect of humanity. This is the different star nations are. So they experience this by creating their own particular star nation culture and using that culture as a way of understanding who and what they are, and also combining it with others, because there's a multi-ethnicity in all of this. Humans understand that there are different ways of being human, and therefore they use that to help understand better who and what they are as a group, as a whole community, and also as individuals, and also the concept of what a really divine relationship is all about. So you take all these different aspects. This is part of just the process of learning. When you become fully conscious, what you're doing are two things. One, you're fully experiencing your potential, and secondly, you're using that to fully understand in that particular breadth of lifespan that you are given in that particular reality as that particular type person, to better understand the nature of who you are, what the society is about, and what other societies around you are all about. So each step of this is just another step in the knowledge of learning better what the divine plan is all about, and how each and every person, both as a wholeness and as a singularity, understands it and works within that to become the best and the most of who and what they are.
Wonderful. What I've often wondered, Sheldon, is, as we're talking of higher beings, are they ever capable of making what we would call mistakes, say, even to the point of some beings losing their life?
No. Loss of life is something that to a fully conscious human being is not in the program, because they have three things they can do, which makes the whole thing different. Limited conscious beings have such a concept as death. Let's look at what limited conscious beings are. Limited conscious beings are separated from their physical self and their spiritual self. They have an aging epigenetic program within all of them that makes you go from being a little kid to an old man or an old woman and to death. A separation then of the physical and the spiritual in a more permanent way. Now let's look at fully conscious beings. Fully conscious beings completely have control and are integrated between their physicalness and their spiritualness. So their spiritual body and their physical body are integrated. So when something happens to them, they can reconstitute their body, their physicality, and their spirituality when they want. When the actual process comes that they've gone through their life contract for this particular lifespan that they're living in, they can then move on. They simply get into their light body, transform their physical body into their light body, and ascend. And so that's the difference between the two groups. We're moving from that one that we just talked about, the limited conscious being, to being a fully conscious being, which means that the basic aspects that make us from one to the other, which is our chakra system, our meridian system, and most importantly, our RNA-DNA system, is going to be transferred. And that's what's happening to us right now. We're bringing in new chakras. We're changing our RNA-DNA. We're resequencing our basically how our genetic code operates. We're getting ready to finish a process of transformation when we finally reach what I like to call the light chamber stage, which is the last stage when we actually go through a metamorphosis that changes us from where we are now as a limited conscious being into a fully conscious being.
Right. Do ETs have a sense of humor? Because I recall on hearing about your childhood, shall we say, and your visits to their ships, you often used to play pranks on them, and they seem to accept that. But how do they view humor?
Well, they're very much into laughter and into joy, and so they're not really serious. People have this concept, like when you think about a great master on this planet, you think about a guy who's really serious. But basically, one of the few things that happens to humans is that when they laugh, it's about the only time they have complete union for just a little bit between their physical and spiritual body. So basically, for that one time when you laugh a lot, you're integrating yourself. And also your head, your brain, it's the only time your brain is really fully connected, one equal with the other. So laughter is really a very unique, wonderful thing that happens to humans. And when it does happen, it's really something that can help heal people. You know, there are people that have actually had the so-called laughter therapy and cured cancer and all kinds of strange and thought of as incurable diseases. So when you look at laughter, and of course, enlightenment, what do we first think about when we come to enlightenment? You talk about Buddha, and he was laughing all the time. He said he couldn't stop laughing, and it was the deepest, most incredible laughter he had had in his whole life at that moment when he became enlightened. The same thing you hear from other great masters. So really, part of the system of becoming enlightened is laughter. So if you do any kind of tricks and practical jokes, that's kind of considered by most human civilizations to be really something that's a part of life. Really integrating yourself really happens a lot when you laugh. So they look at laughter as being not only therapeutic, but being part of the ritual of living.
I'm glad to hear that. But of course, we do say down here that laughter is the best medicine.
Right.
Now,
that is, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'd like to come on to the Agarthans now, who figure quite a lot in your messages, our inner earth friends. Now, you did say that a year of our time is one day to them. Can you explain that?
What was that again?
Yeah, you did say that a year of our time is one day to the Agarthans.
Right.
I wondered what the how significant that is. I mean, does that mean that they say could do as much or learn as much in their one day as we would in a year?
Basically, right. They live in a different reality. They live in a five-dimensional reality, where we live in a three-dimensional reality. Three-dimensional reality is a lot more limited, so things tend to be more sequential. In their reality, it's non-sequential. So it's, because it's non-sequential and they're an internal now, it's like an internal day to them. And so they look upon their reality as change happens. The change happens in its own time, not in the time that we look at, which is the sequential time of one day following another. So really, when you become fully conscious, the whole concept of what time is, as we look at it, becomes entirely different, to where it's very difficult for people who are not understanding 5D to understand time, because time becomes more of an experiential thing than a sequential thing. So the result is that when you look at time, the best thing to do would probably be to look at, let's say, some of the calendars, like the Mayan or the Egyptian ancient calendars, and look at how that relates to what they are looking upon with their societies. And you'll see that time, what they were attempting to do with time was to move it beyond the sequential aspect and move it more toward being an experiential reality.
Right. Now, you've also said about the Agarthans that their birth differs to a human birth. Would you like to comment on that?
Okay, what was that again?
Well, you've said that the Agarthans, when they give birth, that it's different to a human one.
Sure. To them, birth process has really begun long before the actual birthing process began. So what they are doing is they are locking in with the being before the being is actually born. So to them, it's a joyous, experiential experience, and really the pain that women go through as limited consciousness does not happen in when you're fully conscious. It's a wholly different process. As I said, it's a very spiritual process, and beings who are fully conscious have a control of their bodies that we do not have. So as a result, the process happens in a lot different and more joyous way.
Right. And do the souls that are coming into birth actually choose their parents as they do on Earth?
They choose, right. And in the life contract, when it happens, there's the life council of the being, there's the life councils of the parents, and then there's the spiritual councils that normally act as regular councils in galactic society that are also intervening in it. So the process is there's actually a negotiation of all these contracts when this all happens. So the process of what's going to be the process of when they're born versus post-birth and how they grow up is already kind of assumed, whereas here it's kind of haphazard. So it's a lot different.
Right. Now, you tell us that the Agarthans will set up healing centers with a new form of healing. Do you have any idea of how it is different to what we are used to?
Well, one of the things is that it works a lot on intention. So what they will do is they will set up a healing intention for anybody who has problems, And then they'll be able to take that intention and manifest it. So humans, before they become fully conscious, can then be healed in a lot different ways than they are healed right now, because their healers can not only set the intention, but also balance or change the energies in one's body so that the healing process is actually accelerated.
Right. When you say intention with regards, say, to someone who needs healing, are you really saying that they intend to get better?
Exactly.
Right.
And then they take that intention to the next level, which is you set an intention to let it go and let it heal, and they set an intention to bring in the energies that will allow that healing to happen as fast as divinely possible.
Right. This doesn't in any way have anything to do with the metamorphosis chambers.
Well, the way those chambers work is a lot more advanced version than just having two people doing it. What they will now do is actually they set a machine in motion that they can control, which allows our entire gene sequencing to be altered to what it originally was, and allows the epigenetic centers in our body that set these sequencings up to be altered. And as this happens, it also changes the chakra systems in our body. It allows them to manifest, and it also allows our entire body to then become lighter and less dense, and then becomes able to then integrate, or what they like to call lock in and integrate, the physical reality with the spiritual reality. And when all of that happens, then we'll be fully conscious beings. So that is what the center happens. It only takes a few days, and what they are doing with that is allowing people to change in a way that they can acknowledge it, and also comes in a way that is easy enough for all people involved, the people who are the fully conscious ET mentors, the mentors in Agartha, and ourselves, to come together and create a situation that allows joy and community for this move into full consciousness to occur.
Right. Are you saying that without going into the metamorphosis chambers, that it would take a long, long time to reach full consciousness?
Well, it's only a few days, so it's not a long, long time.
No, what I'm getting at is if we didn't go into the chambers and we progressed to full consciousness, say, by whatever would be called the normal means, presumably that would take a lot longer.
Yeah, it would. It would take actually another century or so. But
would it?
We don't need to have that long time, because the concept of the divine plan right now is for us as soon as possible to actually be transformed into being fully conscious beings instead of the limited conscious ones that we are right now.
Oh, good. That's wonderful. Now, you've spoken of the difference between thinking a thought or creating it. Give us some example of what you mean.
Okay. Now, normally in 3D reality, you'll think a thought, and most of the time it may set in motion something, an intention, that may eventually happen. But when you're fully conscious, anything you think manifests. So you learn a process of thinking that's a lot different than ours, because we view ourselves as just a kind of a willy-nilly kind of mind. It's not really all that organized. When you are fully conscious, because you are constantly in the perfect flow of creation, your thoughts then become part of that flow. And so you are actually an extension of the community of oneness, and that extension becomes your oneness, your singularity. And so you understand the differences between the singularity and the flow, and you understand that the thoughts you have are advancing that flow. And so the way you learn to think and be and act is kind of different, because you have this contact continually between the spiritual reality and the physical reality. So you are always in contact in thought, so to speak. I call it divine thought. And from that you can then create physical manifestation of what they like to call a physical thought. So it's different than what we would conceive of, but at the same time, it's very similar in that a thought brings some kind of an action eventually, whereas in their reality, it comes almost instantly. So their concept is of a world that works in an internal now, whereas our world works in a sequence. Something can happen now, maybe 5-10 years from now, it happens. They don't see it that way. They see it as instantly, because they're living in this internal now reality. So that's the difference. So as I was speaking before in time, I'm trying to create with words something that's kind of hard to fully bring forth concisely, but I'm doing my best. I hope if people are understanding of it.
I think so, yes. The only point I would ask there is, surely it must be very difficult then in that case not to create something you didn't intend to.
Well, you learn almost, this is what childhood is about. Sometimes you will have that, but you learn quickly in childhood how to put your mind and your intentions together to create whatever is truly required for you or by you or with the community to have happen. So they think in an entirely different way, but it's not just a bunch of academicians walking around trying to create something. It's done also in joy and in community. And so we have to really see this constant flow in fully conscious beings between the whole and the individual and how they see that interrelated to what the divine is all about in its divine flow. And so that's how their society operates, and that's how each one within that society operates.
Fine. You've spoken of the Syrians absorbing their environment. I'm puzzled to know what that actually means.
Okay. They have people on this planet that have a very funny kind of that is basically based upon one thing. It's called radiodesia, and it allows people to actually, when somebody rings a bell or talks, to see it as a color. Other people see it as a wonderful series of waves that kind of are colored, move around. So, and then there's others that see it as a taste, and there's some that take all of what we just talked about and put it all together. Now look at an environment when you have an advanced version of what we just talked about, plus other aspects of this. So now you can hear, you can see, you can smell, you can see the color, the waves, of everything in your reality. You can see how this reality is put together. You can see where the reality is going. So what they do is they come into a reality and they basically absorb it. They become one with it. Just as we were talking about the divine thought flow, they now get into the divine flow of the reality. And so to them, the reality becomes one with them. They are the reality is them. They're kind of like a really advanced kind of quantum consciousness that comes into this reality and experiences it and absorbs it. So that's how the Syrians deal with it. And then you deal with other groups, like the Pleiadians look at, they just want to help the environment, so they try to communicate with it. What is good, what is bad in that in reality? And then you have the more scientific types, like the Andromedans, that just go out there and they say, we want to actually make that better. We want to create a reality that allows us to be kind of like a co-creator of that reality and take that reality and absorb it, talk to it, communicate it, and then see how it can be changed to be something better. So that's how you see different aspects of humanity view through their cultural window exactly how different realities that they encounter can either be absorbed and looked at just as a scientist, so to speak, as an advanced, I'd like to call it conscious scientist. And those would like to go the next step beyond that. They kind of like to engineer it or just communicate with it to get a better idea of what it is really all about. So that's what we're talking about.
Right. Now, you have spoken of there being a universal language that is translated from one to another, but I noticed that you also mentioned that the Andromedans speak. You use the word speak. Now, did you mean by that that they have some sort of language form, whereas most speak, as it were, telepathically?
Well, they most speak telepathically. About 95% to 98% of what they do every day is telepathically. Once in a while, they'll do a ritual where sound is required, and then they will take their particular language and they will do special chants aloud in it. Because as many people who are experts in chanting will tell you, the sounding of words for a particular purpose is extremely powerful. And so that's what they will do from time to time as part of the ritual aspects of their day. But most of the time, they are mainly communicating with one another through their telepathic abilities. And, of course, their telepathic abilities are so advanced that they can actually talk to somebody on the other end of the galaxy if they want to, if that's part of what they are doing.
Right. Now, I may be taking some of your words out of context here, but in one of your messages, you said that everyone is to ascend. And I think in another interview, you perhaps qualified that a bit by saying that by the end, all will go to the inner earth and the entire population will leave except those that return to their own planets. Now, is that at a stage where anyone who doesn't want to ascend has already left?
Well, no one was allowed onto this planet to incarnate by spirit if they didn't want to do this process before they showed up physically. So it's already been taken care of that way.
Because one could be forgiven for looking around at this stage when we're so close to ascension for thinking that there are people who look so anti anything to do with the higher consciousness and the higher concepts that you can't imagine that they will have or experience some change in time.
Right, exactly. This is something that from a 3D concept of reality, it seems impossible. I've had people who have questioned me about this quite a few times. Mm-hmm. What we have to just realize when we look at this process is that every human being basically is good. And I kind of disagree from some of the greater English philosophers in this. But what I definitely believe is that not only are people good, but that what we have to understand about it is that during their lifetime, certain things have been manipulated and their life contract has been set up that they've done some things that are very, very bad, nasty, and thoroughly despicable. But we have to realize that all human beings, when they go into heaven after they die, start out anew. So this is a process we have to then add to this, and this is what they've made it very important for me to understand. 3D has created an amnesic world in which certain roles have been played by us, some not as nice as others, some better than others, but when we go beyond that amnesic role and we become fully conscious beings, that's all going to go away, and we're going to understand then in a different way than we could ever right now in the total daily looking at our planet to see that certain things could happen, like everybody ascending together. So what we need to then understand is that this process is indeed happening and that we are very close to a great change, and then when we all become fully conscious, we'll kind of laugh at this whole thing and say, my, what did they have us do and what did we agree to do?
Right, yes. Well, I mean, does that mean that in, say, months to come, suddenly a friend or a relation of ours who we think is a bit thick would suddenly develop a higher level of consciousness quite instantly?
Well, you would develop it when you start becoming fully conscious. So some of us may be despicable, crazy types until we get near the tail end of this whole process. But what we have to really understand is that we are really all one, and that's the key part to all this, which a lot of even science is beginning to understand, is that we are really all one. And as we begin to get away from the more Western concept that people are somehow different based on what happens to them during the course of their life on this planet, and we go back to the original concept that we are all one and we basically are all good and we have done some crazy things as part of our particular life contract on this world, we then begin to see that this was all really one giant, incredible game, and that when the game is finally over and we're fully conscious, we, as I said, can laugh at it and also at the horror of what people did to one another before the great change happened.
Well, that will be a wonderful time when we can approach that subject in that way. Now, tell us a little bit about educational holographic rooms.
Okay. When I was a kid, one of the things that I got involved with was their system of education. And basically, they don't really have schools as we have them. What they basically do is take the information that they have and just integrate it into their incredible, fully potentialized mind. And so they have machines that have taken this information and put it into a holographic, incredible holographic 3D reality. And as a result, you can, using this device, go back actually to different times on our planet and throughout the galaxy and experience events just as they occurred. And so it's incredible to see. And that's basically how I was educated when I was a kid in all kinds of different subjects. And that's one of the things that I had. I had a very, as they say here, photographic mind. And I had the ability to be extremely telepathic. And so when I would sit down, they would just entrain me with this information. The information was set up to work at the exact frequency at which your mind operates. And then what it does with that is it entrains your mind with its, with the machine. You then become almost like you disappear, and you just have this, you're like a fly on the wall then, and this history comes by you, and it's 3D. It's a complete reality of what actually happened. And you can then participate in an indirect way in what occurred. And the result is pretty incredible. You pick up stuff that you thought would take forever. Like mathematics in this particular way of doing things becomes incredibly easy. All forms of history, all forms of in this country and in this world, government and how it operates and how societies work. You can then see the historical way in which societies have changed. You can see history, etc. So this is how it works. It's, you sit in a chair that absolutely is, it's like a bed or a chair, actually, that is completely conforms to your body. It caresses you, and you don't feel like you're in a chair anymore. You feel like you're in the world's most comfortable bed. And what happens is, as this entrainment happens, because your brain and the machine become one, sometimes it will induce a kind of sleep. And so you go to sleep, and it's, as you go to sleep, you remember all of this. And when you wake up, it's as though you had been, as I said, like a fly on the wall, whether it's history, whether it's geography or whatever, and you just experience it. And it's something that people have on this planet attempted to try to recreate. There are certain kinds of super learning concepts that people have been trying to recreate using things that science has discovered about the mind and how it learns, to help people better understand how to absorb ideas, read at lightning speed, etc. So the result is that what I had when I was a kid, which was like 50 years ago and just maybe 40 years ago, is something that now is becoming a part of advanced learning systems on this planet, which will lead eventually, as we reach the edge of becoming fully conscious, will become similar in technologies to what I experienced on the ship. So I look at this process that happened to me as a wonderful experience. It gave me a lot of information that I'm now passing on to people. But more importantly, it showed me just the incredibleness of our mind and what it is capable of when we put it in an environment that is set up for it to learn at a level at which it is prepared to learn. And we don't have to worry about any cultural or other forms of limitations that could prevent that from happening. You just get to be, as I said, one-on-one with the machine, and the thing the mind loves to do more than anything is absorb any kind of information. So that's what really happens, is you become more and more able to take this information and use it creatively.
Right, that's wonderful. Now, Sheldon, the time is flying by so rapidly, I can't believe that we're coming into the last few minutes. So I'll ask you one question, and perhaps you could keep the answer fairly brief. What I wanted to know is, you talk of the organic computers that are on these ships, and apparently they're very large, and they have a consciousness of their own, but who is in charge of them?
Well, the computers are basically in charge of themselves and the community that they're in a part of. They really become an extension, not just of a machine, but of the community that they represent, whether it be a Syrian ship or a science and exploration fleet. So the ship's computer doesn't really looked upon as a ship's computer anymore. It's looked upon as another part of the team, a living member of the team, a sentient member of the team, that is working very hard with everyone else to bring together information and experiences They're a part of the process of exploring the consciousness of ourselves and of the greater consciousness of creation and of the consciousness in this galaxy. So to say who's in charge, it's kind of they're in charge of themselves, and the fleet is kind of in charge of them. So it's kind of just like people. That's the way I look at it. They're a living being.
Yeah, that's terrific. It must be quite an experience to have some sort of interaction with them. Now, Sheldon, I'm sure most people who are listening in are well aware of your website address, but in case we have a few new listeners, would you like to give that out so that they know where to subscribe for your messages and where to look at your DVDs?
Sure. The place to go is www.paoweb, that's paoweb.com, paoweb.com. So you go there, and you can look under our updates, which you'll see in the upper right corner, and you can also look down toward the lower left corner, and you'll see what we like to call our PAO products and tools of consciousness, so they can order our DVDs. And also, by doing the updates, you can find out what's going on with the updates, and also if we have any other special things like webinars that we give you, find out how to order them and participate in them as well.
Yes, great. I'm sure the work you're doing is greatly appreciated and takes up a terrific lot of time. In about 1 minute flat, have you got this week's short message for people? Just a little comment?
Well, just stay confident, don't get frustrated, and just know that the changes that are about to happen are close, they're imminent, they'll all happen in right divine time. So maintain a living in both this world and in the world that's about to come. Stay focused in the changes. Keep your intentions. Don't be too frustrated. And just move forward. And just remember one thing. The spiritual essences of all of us is about to become, and already has been for a long time, a great community of one. And that this great community of one is coming together, and that it is an energy that cannot be stopped. It is inevitable.
That's great. Thank you very much, Sheldon. It's been great to talk to you again, and I'm sure our listeners were very absorbed and interested in what you had to say. Thank you again. Right, friends, that was a wonderful interview, as it usually is with Sheldon. My guest next week will be Laura Ketchledge, who is a paranormal author who had a near-death experience about 30 years ago, and she's written that into a number of novels that she's written. And she is currently running a past life investigation on several online magazines. So we'll have quite a bit to talk about. So I hope you can join me. Thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.